David, thank you for coming. It's first time in my life that my own student invited me somewhere, and his bosses did not prohibit it, so thank you. I decided to speak about these things, although many of these palette pictures will be quite old-fashioned. And I did still some research in my young age now, and so you can find in GRQC papers on sources of Toyomatsu Sato solutions on conservation laws, on Horndeske theory, etc., which are new from this year. So this will be rather old-fashioned. I decided because it's more wide range, more cultural perhaps, but also in some respect from sentimental reason, because I was always interested in Machian effects, but I primarily worked on them thanks to Donald Lind Bell in Cambridge, who is very well known as astrophysicist. In fact, we had 2 weeks ago, we had Kip Thorne in Prague for several days and giving lectures. And he wrote this book, Interstellar. If you look into the book, Interstellar, you will find out that he speaks about Donald Lind Bell's article where he suggests that black hole is in the center of galaxies as one of the most remarkable papers in astrophysics, which was ever written in the second half of 20th century. So Donald was, of course, primarily astrophysicist, but he was interested always in GR, and when I was visiting Cambridge, so we worked together. I will not give you references, but essentially all things which I will speak about, even some which are not included in this presentation, like, for example, the question whether perturbations which are beyond cosmological horizons can be observed, rotating perturbations behind, inside. So there are some papers which are on GRQC and which I will not mention here. And you will find all references on GRQC if you would be interested in. Of course, this CH is because of Ernst Mach. We were always interested in Ernst Mach. One of the reasons was that he was fighting with Vladimir Vissarionovich Lenin, so which was very supportive for us, and in Czech Republic or Czechoslovakia former. But the other is that he was really a very influential guy. I should show it to him for Czech physics. He's here. He was 28 years in Charles Ferdinand University in Prague. He was rector of the university for 2 years. And there is no doubt that it was thanks to Ernst Mach, born 1838, who died in 1916, that Albert Einstein was invited to Prague. And that was very influential also. He was there for almost 2 years. And so Mach was really working in physics, and he certainly did influence many physicists. So although later Einstein denied the role of Mach principle, so certainly, I will show you a few quotations which certainly played a role not only on Einstein, but also on Heisenberg, for example. This is slightly patriotic, but let me emphasize that I am patriotic to the place, not to any nation. So mostly these were actually German, but also some Czech. So you see, this is former Czechoslovakia. The Slovakia split off now. It is already a member of European Union, in contrast to Czech Republic. And this is Moravia. The capital, of course, is Prague, as you know, of the whole Czech Republic. It was also former Czechoslovakia. The capital of Moravia is Brno. It's a remarkable city. It's not so beautiful as Prague, not at all. However, it has several very important people. You see, it's not only Ernst Mach who was born very close. Today it is Brno, actually, where he was born. He was born in Chrlice, which is today considered as part of Brno. But there was also Kurt Gödel, which is not so well known, born in 1906 in Brno, the closest friend of Einstein in later years. Gregory Mendel, of course, genetics, Leo Janáček as composer, etc. And there was here Einstein, but there was also Kepler and others. But I will not go so much to history. Let me proceed further. So there are some, in old-fashioned way, written down by my handwriting quotations from Ernst Mach. There will be also some more modern pictures. Don't worry. So this is all quotations from his Science of Mechanics. So the highest philosophy of the scientific investigator is to bear an incomplete conception of the world and to prefer it to any apparently complete but inadequate conception. Of course, inadequate conception was Newton's absolute space for Mach. Mach was primarily very severely criticizing absolute space. And I don't know from whom come, probably from Einstein, this title, Euclidean Barak's absolute space. But I think one of the most influential is this, the investigator must feel the need of knowledge of the immediate connections of the masses of the universe. There will hover before him an ideal insight into the principles of whole matter, from which accelerated and inertial motion result in the same way. And this is Mach. From this in science mechanics, and I'm sure this was one of those quotations and things which Einstein appreciated. He also appreciated his very clear way expressing the things. Now, Einstein in his work actually did first paper, which was written in Prague, on what you could say dragging of inertial frames of Mach principle. He considered within his theory, this was Prague version of the theory, which actually was the line element was such that the only things which was the function was the velocity of light here. And this was here was flat. And so this characterized as gravitational potential, the gravitational field. And by using this, but actually he had to go to nonlinear equations as because he got some troubles with conservation of momentum. So in this theory, he considered the shell of the matter. He put this particle here in the center. And if you start to accelerate the shell, he saw that within this theory, there was force dragging this particle upwards. We know pretty well that this gravimagnetism must exist. Let me show you the argument, which is very trivial, but in order to have some intuitive idea, you know, if you have, this is actually a picture which is from Bernie Schultz's popular book. If you have two streams, here a stream of line mass moving here, and here is stream of line mass moving here. Here is particle of mass m. I will do it very briefly. Now you have compensation of forces from this stream and from this stream on this particle, which is here at rest. Now, if you go to the frame in which this is at rest, so this one here, if we multiply the v, will go as 2v, particle go with v, and this, of course, has v equal to 0. So clearly here now, if you only accept one thing from GR, namely that inertial mass is equivalent to gravitational mass, so this must be acting with bigger force on this particle than this one, because this is moving with 2v and or than this one. So clearly there must be a repulsive effect here in order that this would stay in equilibrium. So you can read in greater detail. You can even derive roughly the formula which really comes from linearized theory. There is another argument which actually Jeff Winokur told me about, and namely that you take two particles, they start to fall down, you consider the time, and then you go to frame in which they move, and they go together. But then, of course, there is a time dilation between one frame to the other. And so there must be some repulsion between these two particles before they get together. So in contrast to electricity, two streams are repelling if they are going in the same direction in GR. Now, I forgot to be more romantic at the beginning. The romanticism is actually, strangely enough, in Weinberg books. Starry night. Imagine starry night. You go out, and from pleasure, you start to rotate. And you look up, and you see the stars are going around, but simultaneously, your hands are going up. Because, of course, these fixed stars determine your okay inertial frames, and so you have now non-inertial forces, which are centrifugal forces, which put your hands up. And this is actually base or foundation of an experiment which this celebrated Kip Thorne, who was in Prague very recently, suggested with Polnareff. I will go to this in the meantime. But let me say, we are on the Earth, and you put Foucault pendulum, you put it not on the North Pole because there is no laboratory, but on the South Pole, so it's upside down, because America has laboratories there. And you put Foucault pendulum. So clearly, the plane of Foucault pendulum is fixed by these fixed stars, so they keep it with their hands. However, we have a rotating object here, and that is the Earth. So this Earth, which rotates, will a little bit drag the plane of this Foucault pendulum in the rotation in this sense. And indeed, it will drag by this, which is about 221 milliarc seconds per year. And this is the base of the article by Braginsky, Polnareff, and Thorne, Foucault pendulum at the South Pole, proposal for an experiment to detect Earth's general relativistic gravitomagnetic field, which is Fizeau of Letters already in 1984. People here are quite a number of people are doing very theoretical work, but also astrophysical work. And so you know there is something called Bardeen-Petersen effect, which is extremely important in astrophysics. Namely, that if you have a rotating black hole and you have accretion which is misaligned, which is not perpendicular on the axis of rotation, so closer to black hole, the accretion disk goes to equatorial plane. And this is caused by both viscosity and this gravimagnetic effect. Now, this was the base of experiment, which in some sense was absurd. I even spoke with people who were, because by short time in being in Boulder, who were controlling this experiment. This is this famous gravity probe B, which started in 59. People are joking that in the meantime, before the starting and before the final results, Americans sent the man to the moon. Many things happened, and this experiment was going on. And this guy Everett was going to Congress, and with his long hair, he reminded Einstein. And so they gave him money always, and he could continue. But in some respect, it was a disappointment, this experiment, because the first hope to measure the dragging of inertial frames, you will see it better here. So you see, this is the experiment. This is the satellite. You have to point it to fixed star. And you measure two things. You measure geodetic precession, which is combination of Thomas precession plus curvature of space considered caused by the Earth. And you measure the dragging because the Earth rotates. And this frame dragging precision, this is just extremely small. This is 39 milliarc seconds per year. And the hope was that this will be measured with the accuracy of 1%. Eventually, it was measured with accuracy of 20%. And it's quite absurd how long it took. Well, let me skip this. The reason why it was, well, only let me point what was the problem. The problem was this patch effect anomalies, that while mechanically both rotor and housing are exceedingly spherically electrically not, namely you had there four gyroscopes, and these gyroscopes were in some housing, and there appeared charges, although they were not absolute charges, just charges patches on both housing and these gyroscopes, which caused also dragging, the change of the axis of the gyroscope. And so these they had to change. So let me conclude this by saying that the very final result of this, if you are interested in, appeared only in 2015 on 17th November in classical quantum gravity. So you can read there. There was a whole number, whole issue was actually focus number for this experiment. So let me now go to something else. Let me go to dragging of magnetic field lines, which I promised there, in which actually my former students today, involved astrophysicists, were continuing. I was interested many years ago for all stationary fields around Kerr black holes, and we have some papers with Lujak, etc. I was primarily interested in different effect, which is, I think, still unexplained today. If you have a rotating black hole, and you put magnetic field, which is uniform and infinity, and you rotate this to extreme case so that you have a squared equal to m squared, you get complete expulsion of magnetic field lines. So this extreme black holes reveal Meissner effect. And this was not only for this case, for any stationary sources here, but strangely enough, I have pictures, but I am not going to project them now, for coupled electromagnetic and gravitational perturbations of an Einstein-Rosen black hole, and you again get complete expulsion of the field lines. And Gary Gibbons and others generalized these things for higher dimensional objects, brains, etc. However, this is only for axisymmetric field. And we were also, I think, the first who did misaligned field. So that asymptotically is this is rotation axis. And this field has the now component which is parallel to the axis of rotation, but of course also perpendicular. Now these pictures there are for the case of a rotating black hole and magnetic field, which is uniform and infinity, and it's everything is in equatorial plane. Black hole rotates in this way, and the field lines are dragged around as seen here. Now it is now that there is magnetic flux, there is no Meissner effect for this case. It's only for these stationary cases. Of course, I should remark that in this non-stationary, in this non-aligned case, actually there is flux of angular momentum, and these are non-stationary. So eventually, the black hole and magnetic field must align. But it takes very, very long time. And so one can consider these things. What people, and because this is not quoted in my case, so primarily is this guy who is today the director of our Astronomical Institute of Academy, but with his student Kopáček and others. So they studied quite a lot, three-dimensional pictures of these magnetic field lines. The reason being that you find that there are null points. There are points where the magnetic field becomes null. And electric field is here. And so they feel that here, actually, the particles can get quite accelerated. Of course, all this depends how you plot it. So this is with respect to local non-rotating frames. They then did actually freely moving particle observers around rotating black hole Kepler observers, and with respect to them, they plotted this field line. But they always get these null points and discuss their astrophysical relevance. As this is their picture of Karasen Kopáček, sorry. And so here, the whole horizon is actually shrunk into this point. What is more colorful is the higher value of magnetic field, but one can feel here these layers of magnetic structures caused all by dragging of inertial frames. There is no plasma here. It's just vacuum magnetic field around rotating black hole. Well, this is a little bit exaggerating for me because I am not really doing here astrophysics, but you know that this effect, Blandford-Znaik mechanism, etc., of magnetic field extracting energy from rotating black holes is today the main explanation for jets coming from the centers of galaxies.
But that assumes there is plasma. That assumes there is plasma.
So if you, sure. That's right. Yeah. Sure.
Previous solutions within a force-free setup or with just plasma?
No, these are just Maxwell. You are completely correct that if you assume, and people Komisarov and others do, if you have plasma, you get actually also some fluxes. Although some people who do, Narayan and others in MIT, they told me that they are really not able to do numerical simulations till really A equal to M. It's quite complicated to reach this value so that they don't know whether there could be some expulsion or not. But you are correct, if you add plasma, you this effect gets smaller. Now, this is something which is more academical, but it's of interest, and it clearly shows how it is with dragging of inertial frames. What you consider here, we considered actually with Skalzed and with Lynn Bell, both are dead today. So actually, Donald Dylan Bell, I probably forgot, died just 1 month before Hawking last year, in February, I think, that's earlier. So what one considers here is shell of dust, which is falling down, but which is rotating with a smaller rotation in the sense that you consider odd parity L equal one perturbation, really small angular momentum. So there is a slowly rotating or slowly rotating Kerr solution outside. The only term which enters is this one in G zero phi. And so this is perturbation which causes frame dragging. So this is a field which is outside the shell. And you can go inside and you will see that you get the dragging of these inertial frames. What you get is that if you, there is still a flat space here inside. You can find out that you can satisfy Israel junction condition. When you go through the shell, you have flat space here inside and you have this perturbed Schwarzschild by this linear term I indicated outside. But you find that inertial frames inside here rotate with respect to the fixed stars at infinity. They rotate with respect to phi equal to constant, which is the angle where are at rest the observers very far away. And you get this rotation of these inertial frames. And you get all this actually from constraint equation. So this effect of rotating and dragging is all instantaneous. This is very important thing that all this comes really from constraint equations. You will see it for gravitational waves, how we do it. So you see that static observers here inside, they are in flat space, but still they experience Euler acceleration. You don't see Coriolis or centrifugal because you are limited to linear terms in omega, but these are quadratic. And you will find that you can calculate how the concurrence of Erlang twists. And there is a detailed paper in classical quantum gravity which compares it with electromagnetism, where there is no constraint, no instantaneous effect when you when we calculated Green's functions and when you have really effects which are retarded in contrast to gravity. Now, let me go to gravitational waves. So there were actually more papers, three papers, but let me look at this in more detail. So first of all, we are not interested in what many people were, like Bini, Felice, etc., Tucker, when they took spinning particles or gyroscope immersed directly in the wave. We are interested in more fundamental question, namely whether energy and angular momentum in purely vacuum spacetime can cause the local inertial frame to rotate. In some respect, you would expect that this must be the case. But of course, Einstein did not consider it. Primarily thought about matter. So what we will consider here is really rotating waves. I will show you the solution. You can do it quite mathematically. I will do it first for a cylindrical case, for cylindrical waves, where it is simpler. And then I will do it really even for asymptotically flat waves, where one has to go to second order perturbation theory, and one will find that the dragging exists here. What is important, however, is that we are looking at frame dragging here inside where there are no waves. Okay, essentially this is flat space. What we will do is really waves which are going in, rotate, and then going again out, and we look here. So it will be very similar. And at the end, I will show you simulations of these spheres which I had before. As they go in and they go out, you can arrange it by doing counter-rotating particles inside the shell. It's very similar to the effect of the waves. So what is important here is we do rotating gravitational waves without reaching this origin. Here we, in essentially flat space, put gyroscope, and we see that they are dragged with respect to the observers at infinity. And again, all will come from constraint equation. All will come again instantaneously, essentially from r theta, from phi t equal to zero. R is Ricci tensor. Now, I should say that dragging, this is a very sophisticated paper. Perhaps you have heard about this, Corino Shen. I don't know mathematical details, but these are mathematicians who used already in 2006 this analytic gluing technique where you can do waves at initial hypersurface and you can join it to Kerr solution. That was very important for such people like Helmut Friedrich because you know that he has this hyperboloidal initial value problem where you start on hyperboloids here with initial data and you show that everything is okay here, that it develops proper solutions. However, it was very unclear how it is here in space like infinity. And these guys have shown that you can put here waves and they do this gluing technique where they can show that here at this corner they can put Kerr. So here is Kerr and here is Kerr. And of course this then you can evolve and you can find the nice, well-behaved solution. So clearly there must be some dragging of the waves because you have waves inside and you have Kerr outside which drags the thing. So this was just a side remark, but we would like to see more explicitly really the results. All this is very implicit with Hybro mathematics. So what we do is we do rotating gravitational waves in the symmetry reduced general relativity. So what we do is pure waves, no strings. You can do it also with strings, and we have some papers where you have rotating cosmic strings inside. But this will not be the case. This will be the most physical case, pure waves. We assume only translational symmetry, but we don't assume cylindrical symmetry. Now, I decided to do this in more details because it's useful. It's, of course, well known in some in many respects. But usually, you do this reduction in stationary spaces, not in these time-dependent spaces. So you start with this type of metric. This e to psi is the norm of the Killing vector d by dz. We have translational symmetry, so we have d by dz symmetry. So this is this modulus, this magnitude of this Killing vector. You put this out and you form here this three metric GAB. And you will find out that actually you can reduce this 3+1 problem to 2+1 problem in 2+1 relativity, where the source as a matter field is just this psi, which arose from the norm of the killing vector. And this is the Ricci tensor in 2 plus 1. And this psi satisfies just the wave equation. So you get this simple of equations in 2 plus 1 relativity. You can find out in three dimensions, this you know, the Riemann tensor is determined just by Ricci tensor. So here it is explicitly written how it looks like. Now, to solve this problem explicitly, of course, is still a very formidable task if you have just one killing vector. So we assume that this psi and its derivatives are small, and we develop approximation procedure. We assume that it's this epsilon times some other functions. Ricci tensor will be O epsilon squared, the same Riemann tensor. Metric can be written in this way. And so we can construct a genuinely rotating phi-dependent solution of the wave equation in flat space and still satisfy a field equation in terms of O epsilon squared by solving this and assuming this dependence of the metric tensor. However, we are primarily interested in the rotation of inertial frames, gyros, on the axis, which is regular. There is no string there. And so these phi-dependent terms will play no role, so that we really will concentrate on axially symmetric terms in the Fourier expansion of omega as a function of phi, and we solve these equations for JB as averaged over phi. So what we really do solve here is the Einstein equations in 2 plus 1, where the source is averaged of this stress tensor, and the averaging is just made over phi from 0 to 2 pi, integral of 2 pi. So we have source which is axisymmetric, and also JB, but d pi d phi is not hypersurface orthogonal. We still get the line element which has this term which characterizes dragging. You write down the field equations, which are written here. These are not field equations. These are just left-hand sides of field equations. This is just the Ricci tensor in terms of this function gamma here and in terms of this function W. And you will see and omega. And you will find again that there will be, these are derivatives with respect to time, are dotted, and primes are derivatives with respect to rho. And again, you see there is a constraint equations which contains no time derivative. It's just for this component, which is expected. This is phi, the second coordinate is phi, and this is time coordinate. And this will cause the dragging, and from this we shall calculate how it is. Now, so how we do calculate it, and what type of solution of this wave equation do we choose? So this is a wave equation for the scalar field psi, and this is the equation which followed from this constraint equation for omega. And we shall assume that psi can be written in this way in terms of Bessel functions. And we are inspired by exact Bonnor-Wheeler pulse. This is old solution, but it's a beautiful solution. It's the only explicit solution, really, of Einstein's field equation, which is cylindrically symmetric, which goes in, there is no singularity, and again goes out. It's a cylindrical case, and it's the exact solution of full Einstein's equation, which we are here inspired by. We are not using because we do this approximation scheme, but when we do spherical case, so it will be very similar, useful to use. And so this our function psi looks in this way in terms of this Bessel functions. And you can see that it is really rotating. We have, of course, magnetic quantum number, so to speak, in quotation mark. It's azimuthal number here, m. And we get rotation so that phi is omega over m time t. So the phase is really rotating around this time. And we do superposition of these local waves, of these waves. So we write from 0 to infinity over omega over these Bessel functions. This constant A is actually something which characterizes the width of the pulse. This is here, and it will play a role also later. So here is the Weber-Wheeler pulse. How it is exactly. This is exact solution of Einstein's field equations, but we do only this part for psi, as you know. So here, this is exactly also for this function gamma. So the metric is this. This is cylindrically symmetric solution. These are Einstein's field equations. You introduce these dimensionless quantities, and you find explicitly how psi looks and how gamma looks. So this is quite useful solution for testing numerical things and other things. And it is really the solution which is of the four modes of pulse, which goes in, if this is rho and this is t, which goes in and again goes out, but never really reaches the origin and is always regular. So I think I should not so much spend time with mathematics here. I just tell you that by using this psi, which we had here in terms of gamma functions, etc., we get the complete solution. Now, this is solution of linearized equation, of course, but it depends on phi. And the phase clearly shows that it is rotating around. Now, this chi is more complicated function here. And what we really get, if you do profile, you will see it after a while. So we get a wave which goes in, spirals in, then just rotates, does not reach the origin, and then it goes out. So we can now calculate what is really the, we can integrate for this omega from that constraint equations, integrating by parts in terms of some integrals which I will omit, and which I'll evaluate it in detail in the paper. And you get how inertial frames at the original are dragged during the time. And you see the greatest it is at time, this is dimensionless time, this is just t over a. The greatest it is when the wave is closest to the origin. The wave goes in, rotates, and again and goes out, and the dragging of inertial frame with respect to infinity is the highest at t equal to zero. And you see there is really no time lag between the wave which arrives closest to the axis. You can show that most energy of the wave never gets very near to the axis. It gets roughly to this rho tilde equal to 0.4. And it is very similar to shell rotating and collapsing. It's a non-local effect, and it is given from the constraint equations. Very far from the axis, there is, of course, dragging as well. And this goes, this falls off as 1 over rho tilde squared.
What prevents this wave from reaching all the way to the origin?
It's angular momentum.
Angular momentum
It's this angular momentum and the wave rotates. It's like wheelchair, and it goes again out because of this rotation. You can do the same with shell. I think you remember, it's this A really, it's the character of the wave, you know, that it never reaches it. We shall, after a while, see the analogy with respect with the shell. So with the shell, you can also do that it is breathing. It goes down and again goes out. What you have to do, this is completely spherical symmetry, that you have to send particles in all directions. And essentially what these particles do is this. They can go here, this one goes here, this one goes here, and all this is rotated, okay? So they are counter-rotating, but with angular momentum. So it's thanks to angular momentum that these particles don't get really to the origin. So it's thanks to the angular momentum of the wave. Here is the just metric calculated, and this is this omega in greater detail. So here it is more nicely indicated. So how the wave, these sort of wide things are where the amplitude is bigger. And this is all what was done by computer people. Nicely, these pictures. So the waves goes in. Then it, at t equal to zero, it really resembles what is called in English cartwheel. So it is this. And then it again goes out, and again aligns in this beautiful shape. So here, actually, it is the spirals are leading here. Here, this is leading, and angular momentum here is propagated inside, more and more inside. Here it stays, and here, what is leading are actually this inner part. And of course, this is exactly what liked very much. I came with the waves because Donald was not much interested and knowledgeable of waves, but he... Sorry?
What quantity are you looking at here? What quantity are we looking at here? What are you plotting here?
Amplitude of the waves, of the scale wave.
Just the psi metric.
That's right. This is psi, and where it is more bigger, so there is this there is this white.
Kind of wave. They're not plane waves.
No, these are not plane waves. These are really originally cylindrical waves. So these are cylindrical waves which goes inside and then again inside. They are infinite, of course, in this case. I will do spherical case. They are infinite in this direction, in that direction, okay? Because they started from cylindrical waves. But they are certainly not plane. And so they have translational symmetry, but go in and again go out. But you will see that you can do the same with asymptotically flat case, but it's more complicated because it leads to second order perturbation theory. But what I wanted to say is that here was, of course, joining with great pleasure Donald Lindebel, because he says this is exactly how spiral arms are formed in galaxies, you know, and it exactly how angular momentum, of course, they are going out. So how angular momentum is propagated out by this leading inside, actually. Here it was leading by these spirals outside, and here it is leading inside. And angular momentum here is propagated outside, whereas here is propagating inside. And here is this moment where it stands. Now, as I said, so this is what Donald added there, that it's angular momentum transport in galaxies. What you can do, you do just classical gravitational strength tensor, which is given here. Psi is just gravitational potential. And let me just emphasize what you should perhaps keep in mind, and what is clear, that in order to get this transfer of angular momentum, you need these cross terms. You need to have, so to speak, collaboration. This is stress tensor for gravity, just classical Newtonian type gravity. But you need a derivative with respect to rho, radial derivative, combined with the derivatives with respect to psi. And then you get really this gravitational couple, this torque, or, well, couple is probably a better word, which transfers the angular momentum outside. So as it is written here, to carry angular momentum outwards must be a positive correlation between d rho with respect to psi and d rho, d phi of psi averaged over the cylinder. And trailing sense of spirality to counter of psi equal to constant to counters outer parts of spiral galaxy travel inner parts are dragging outside. So this is similarly to gravitational waves, that angular momentum transport outward, the spiral formed by counters of psi must trail the inner parts, but oppositely, when they form a leading spiral with the outside further advanced than the inside, and the angular momentum is transported inward. This was the upper part of the figure, and then the lower was as it goes outside. At t equal to zero, there is no angular momentum transport. Counters of psi are just rotating what is in English called cartwheel. And the waves themselves never reach much farther than around rho. This is rho equal divided by this A, this typical length. But the second order effect of the angular momentum causes the rotation of the inertial frame within the waves, as was calculated. Now, this comes more complicated part, which is in three dimensions, and I will not go very detailed. I will then show you some pictures. So these are snapshots. This is again scalar wave, and let me show you that it is again inspired by this Weber-Wheeler pulse. Just what is inspired is really the solution of the wave equation. So the solution of the wave equation can be written in this way. Now this is the wave which is asymptotically flat, which does not reach, which starts from infinity, goes in, and again goes out, which is rotating thanks to this YLM here. And it has, again, this pulse-type behavior. This is because of this A plus IT. But better seen, it is here, perhaps, because this is already in real terms. And so you see there is this A squared plus T squared, R squared minus T squared. Then this creates this pulse-type behavior of this wave. And of course, it is rotating, as is clearly seen here in this cos dependent on time. Lambda depending on time is given here. Now, you expand this in tensor spherical harmonics, and because you want to have perturbation theory for linearized metric, you start with linearized solution, which corresponds to this rotating wave, and then you go to the second order, and you calculate just dragging effects from the constraint equation, which comes in the second order. So these are the usual things, but I will not go in detail to what you mostly know, and if not, so you will not learn it in any case. Now, these are tensor harmonics.
Sorry,
and
did you say that they are asymptotic flat space then? So I thought...
No, this is linear perturbation. It is linear. It's not in flat space. It's linearized theory, the starting point.
I understand.
And now we go to the second order.
But the decay at infinity, does it decay at infinity? Or does it look like it's going to a constant at infinity?
Sorry, no. They are similar as before. They go from infinity inside and rotate it, and again go outside.
At infinity, do you recover flat space then to leading order or not?
Well, you recover it here.
How? I mean, in the expressions you show, it didn't seem so. In the previous slide, it didn't seem that it would go to zero.
So this is here, for example, okay? So you see, so this goes as R to L. This is R squared R4, and this is L plus 1. So it's R4 L plus 1. And so...
In the next slide is where I was seeing the expressions with H, right? You have 1 over R and the coefficients that go like R.
Sorry, this is... these coefficients are already coefficients for spherical harmonics, okay? This is the notation for these spherical harmonics. Now, here are these H's. These H's, it's not written here explicitly, you are correct to doubt it, but these H's are formed from these psi's by doing derivatives, okay? So this is a regeneration function for these H's here. So they really behave in this way, which I had here somewhere. They go from scry minus to scry plus. They are very actually this would not be here if here is R. So they go in this way and this way. So you get here. Actually, they go as 1 over R. It's a good example, actually, of these waves, of these pulse waves, that you should use Bondi's metric if you do radiation, because if you do T equal to constant, you get no radiation here, of course. You get a very big fall. But if you go with this, so if you introduce this and you fix this and then go with T equal to infinity, you get really fall off as expected for radiation. Mm-hmm.
What happens if you... compare this gravitational situation with rotating electromagnetic waves?
I think it would be very similar, but you would not get no dragging inside. Actually, you would not get any dragging of inertial frames inside, but you can do it with electromagnetic waves. Actually, let me tell you one remarkable thing in which I would be still interested to look in. I'm not sure whether you ever heard about Hopfions here. These are very strange particles which are now popular in various parts of physics, in which you have knotted magnetic fields. It's inspired by Hopf vibration, and they can live. It's not clear whether they are in nature or not. And there are some people who wrote about these Hopfions, about these are electromagnetic structures. That is why I recall them. And I found, actually, because of some reason and collaboration with Lars Anderson in Einstein Institute and Achsteiner, that our odd parity solutions could be made for electromagnetic case, and it would be odd parity part of these Hopfians. I don't know yet how it will be with even parity. I didn't do it for even parity, but I'm certainly interested in looking at this. So you can do certainly this for electromagnetic case, because you can do Debye potentials, you can do generating function for, and you get E and B, the electric and magnetic field, and you get this rotation.
The difference is that the electromagnetism, you don't have the weak equivalence principle.
Sorry? You don't have what?
Electromagnetism, you don't have the equivalence principle.
Oh, sure.
So then, and also, because of the gravity, the gravitational energy of the waves is not covariant. It's not a tensor.
Yeah, that's true. I know. I know these problems. But you can go to high frequency and you can say what is actually, we even do here eigenmomentum momentum effectively. I will show you how. But I agree, it's more complicated, of course, to speak about localization.
Well, some frame, there's no gravitational energy.
Sure, sure. Well, I mean, you know, this is global stuff. Equivalence principle is at a given point, so you would have to, you know, to destroy gravitational field you can do here or you can do here. But I agree that localized gravitational energy is much more complicated than with localized electromagnetic energy. But you can certainly do in flat spaces rotating electromagnetic waves similarly as did here. But we are interested in this frame dragging, and this is certainly something which will not arise in electromagnetic case. So what we do now here is that we go, we solved the first order Einstein's equation. This H1 is this linearized thing decomposed in these spherical tensor spherical harmonics, and this is the first order Einstein's tensor. And now we go to the second order metric perturbations. And we obtain that this first order for H2, we assume that G mu nu is eta mu nu plus H1 plus H2. So G mu nu 1 for H2 is given as this second order Einstein tensor in which H1 and H1 is substituted. So, or it's Einstein tensor in which H1 and H1 is substituted, so it will be second order. And now this already comes quite complicated. This is here. And you still can solve it, although to solve these equations completely is impossible, or numerically certainly yes, but analytically. But fortunately, we are interested in this frame dragging, and this frame dragging is hidden inside of this component in second order for GT phi, which is given in this way where omega zero is here. And so what we really need is this L equal to one only, and m equal to zero equation. And this is basis of our starting point for calculating the frame dragging. Namely, this is second order perturbation in H, which is caused by this RT phi second order H1 and H1 component. And from this, we calculate this omega zero. And this omega zero, now it comes what you asked already some time ago. I mean, Luis asked this how actually from this chi are constructed these components. You see, this is the chi which was actually psi. This is essentially psi up to some constants proportional. And these components for metric tensor are given as derivatives of this chi. And this is one computer algebra you get this second order Ricci tensor, which is pretty long, but one can do it. And you can calculate how the inertial frames at the origin are dragged by these rotating waves on the dependence of magnetic number m. So this is m is from 1 to 10. So m, of course, characterizes the rotation of the wave. So the more the waves rotate, the more you get this dragging at the origin. And you can, of course, the biggest dragging you get for t equal to zero because the wave is closer to the origin. This is what actually my former student, he's today also over 50, Tomáš Ledvinka calculated nicely how the stars, fixed stars at infinity, when they shine through this wave, would look and would rotate it on the sky. Now, I still have about 7 minutes, so let me say something which was the content of the paper which I primarily wrote some years ago about how you understand Max principle. The best understanding of Max principle was given by Philipp Frank very soon after Einstein formulated it, and that was that he said, whenever tramway jerks, so it's fixed stars who throw you down. And so however, Bondi has quite nice formulation of Max principle. And I should say that it's not very fashionable today to speak about Max principle. You can speak about all these dragging effects without mentioning Max principle. Although if you look into the best book about Einstein, which is about Abraham Pais, which is really about science of Einstein. So he writes that he feels that there is still future in trying to explain inertia and Max principle, but he says, but probably only through quantum things also. So, you know, David, if this guy is correct, I mean, not only Mann, but this singleton. So he tries to do quantum radiation and Max principle, but that's a different story. It's not clear at all. But I think that what is nice and what we succeeded in formulating that you can understand Max principle is this way, is that this is formulation by Bondi, very old. All motions, velocities, rotation, and accelerations are relative. Local inertial frames, this is the main thing. Local inertial frames are determined through the distribution of energy and momentum in the universe by some weighted averages of the apparent motion. And how we can do this, we did, or I did, this is a long paper, I will show you reference to this, within cosmological perturbation theory. But the main thing which I would like to turn your attention to is that you can pick up gauges in cosmology which are, I believe, much better than synchronous gauge, which are much more unique, which I call instantaneous or Machian gauges. And the main idea is the following. You start with some cosmological frame. These are not, of course, inertial observers. But at any point, you can look at locally inertial observer who has no acceleration and who has acceleration, of course, with respect to this cosmological frame. By calculating these accelerations, by calculating rotations of these inertial frames, which is here indicated how you do, you can find out what is the distribution of local inertial frames. What you need in order to do this, you need to do these components. So this is, of course, all now frame dependent, but still, you need, when you start with this cosmological frame, if you know these derivatives, so you know how to determine at any point, how to determine local inertial frame. And the question is now, how from perturbed Einstein's equation, sorry, in a linear order, how to from perturbed Einstein's equation in linear order, you can determine these quantities. And I found that these are, without doing any harmonic decomposition, et cetera, doing just perturbation. So if you concentrate just on these equations, I am emphasizing there is no harmonic decomposition. However, it's only a linear perturbation theory. So we don't consider here waves. So if we consider this equation, and this, so all these equations become elliptic. And only this is the equation which is describing waves, and which, of course, is hyperbolic. It contains second time derivatives. Now, the time derivatives now are these primes, okay? So, however, what we have to choose is proper gauge. And the gauge is given by this script T. This script T is just gradient of this traceless perturbation of H. And K is the perturbation of external curvature. So if this is not here, and if this is equal to zero, and all these equations, so these equations become elliptic. The only thing which remains really hyperbolic is this. And from these equations, these three, you can determine these quantities which you need in order to determine local inertial frames. What these gauges means, I call them Mach 1, Mach 2, and Mach 3, etc. So the time slicing is such that I use for time slicing this condition, which is actually what people in numerical relativity call minimal distortion gauge or minimal distortion shift vector. It is a gauge in which the Schwarzschild metric is such that the spatial part is just flat. It is this, I think, Goldstand, whatever, Pine-Levy coordinates. So this is the gauge condition on this edge. But then you combine it, and you combine it in this Mach 1 with what Bardeen calls uniform Hubble expansion gauge, which gives you perturbation of external curvature equal to zero. And then for this Mach 2 gauge, you have the perturbation of inner scalar curvature is equal to zero. And so using these, you can really determine this local inertial frame. So this is this old paper, but I believe that there is something. I mean, few people use it, but not many. So I think I will, I don't want to finish here. I have here three. Although it's probably the nicest part of my seminar, but I want to show you a few videos, we already prepared it here. Well, we did other papers, but you will find them. This is on acceleration and dragging by acceleration, but This is now how I will get back. Oops. So this is a video for these incoming waves, for the cylindric waves. And again, you know, this cartwheel and going again out. But I think what is more interesting, and in this sense, this makes my talk more up to date. I don't think I still will skip this. This is for this three-dimensional case. And again, it's proportional to the amplitude of psi. And this is based on the figures which actually Bill Barker, who is the guy who is doing PhD under Anthony Lassenby in Cambridge, produced just last year, and it was published in Classical Quantum Gravity. And it's the dragging inside the shell of dust, however, which stops collapsing, and again it goes out just because of this effect of non-zero angular momentum I was trying to explain at the beginning of the seminar. And you see there is a dragging of inertial frame inside. Rg would correspond to Schwarzschild radius of this shell. So this shell has small angular momentum, but it's formed from the particles which are not just collapsing, but which go around, and that is why it can bound. And what you can observe on this is not this, but this was probably a mistake. Here is something. So you see, this is how the dragging becomes, it's a very natural, actually, a very understandable, how the dragging becomes much bigger if the shell gets closer to its gravitational radius. It never goes through, black hole is not created. This is how it rotates with respect to infinity. This is how it rotates the material of the shell. This is this upper arrow, and this is how inside the shell the inertial frames are dragged. So the difference between, but this is based really on expressions or real calculations, although the angular momentum is exaggerated. So you see that as this shell is rotating, this goes with the shell, so the dragging of inertial frames here becomes much bigger because the shell gets closer to its gravitational radius. Of course, it can never get in because we do linear perturbation theory only. So that you really are omitting all the second order effects. Thank you very much. Well, how to stop it, yes?
Newton worried about the angular momentum.
Sorry?
Newton's bucket experiment.
Yes?
Built a bucket of water.
I know about it, yes.
And filled a bucket of water.
Yeah.
Shape.
Yeah.
So the question is, the shape stays relative to what? That's where Max's principle comes in.
Yeah.
General relativity does not solve that problem.
Well, general relativity, well, I try to indicate what is really a possible attitude to Max's principle in general relativity. Namely, that it's a determination of local inertial frames. But Max, this Mach problem of, I think it is solved. I mean, if you rotate with respect to local inertial frames, so of course this really is created, and it's created because of friction between the water and the walls. But all these experiments is what Kip Thorne and Braginsky and Polnare wanted to do on the South Pole. I think it's a typical GR effect, and it is that which is predicted by GR. It's a question whether you call it Mach or Mach principle or whatever, but certainly this dragging is effect of influence of matter on local inertial frames. That's without doubt.
Another point I want to make is that, like the angular momentum tensor, the angular momentum tensor is not a covariant tensor.
Oh, sure. For gravity, it's not. Inequality. Well, you can do many things. As you people know here, you can do this high-frequency waves if you have. So you can locate nicely gravitational wave energy and momenta by using this Isaacson leveraging. And so there are situations in which you can say what is energy and what is not. What we did actually, what was inspirative, and it's used now by some people, Gary Gibbons even used it and others, we did something which Julia called KBL from Katz, Me, and Lyndon Bell, attitude to conserve quantities. But what we need is background. You can introduce the background, say, the sitter, and put there a black hole, and you can calculate what is the mass of black hole in the sitter. And you put to the background, you put zero energy, and you can find that it comes to be M. It was used by various people. UNRU actually used it once for cosmological, or UNRU, I don't know how you call him. And it was inspired by actually our considerations Mach principle. What I'm saying, I'm not so happy with it, although it has over 100 citations, this paper. So it is also in GRQC. And it's relativistic conservation laws. And this, we didn't call it KBL, this is what Julia and others call it. Conserved quantities or KBL superpotential. What it, however, needs is to introduce background. So that we need to introduce some background metric with respect to this, you measure then the energy, for example, of a black hole inside. So there are various attitudes. You know, Penrose has, through his twisters, I don't think that many people use this, quasi-local mass. And so I think particularly what is pleasing is that for high-frequency gravitational waves, and this is what people are using mostly, this Isaacson's expression is purely tensorial, clearly.
That's a specific case.
Well, it is high-frequency, but of course high-frequency is very often fully satisfied because you have usually flat background, and then just the wavelengths must be much shorter than characteristic radius of curvature.
Yeah, I'm curious in your application to cosmology and trying to design a frame. So I agree that that is a problem in cosmological studies. What is a frame and then how do you just... But an alternative is to try and find...
I have some problem with acoustics here, yes?
An alternative is to deploy a fully covariant approach.
Yes.
Do an analysis with respect to covariant quantities and just focus on observables as opposed to quantities that are related to a particular frame. So I wonder what your thoughts are about this.
Sorry, to concentrate on quantities?
On a covariant description of the perturbations,
detached
from any particular frame, and then study those quantities.
So what do you mean by this? You would do, say, perturbations of Riemann tensor or?
Yeah, something like that.
Or, excuse me. I don't know. I mean, there is this very much used, this Bardeen's gauge invariant quantities. However, Bardeen decomposes, and I think this is not also something which is very pleasing if you decompose in scalar, vector, and tensor spherical harmonics, because even this is non-local already. We tried to avoid this. So I'm sure there are various approaches, and there are these quite... people are using also this Bell-Robinson energy momentum attitude, which is actually from Riemann tensor, but it's not really in the spirit of physics, is it? Because one would like to have energy and momenta which are of lower derivatives than field equations. And these Bell-Robinson has Riemann tensor inside, so this is not so nice. Yeah. Yes?
So Sciama used an approach to look at the... to apply Mach's principle to calculate the strength of the gravitational force. Considering, you know, a particle as being, every particle as being under the influence of all the other particles in the universe. Now, in that, there was no rotation involved. If you try to do the same kind of calculation with rotations, then you would want, you know, no net angular momentum about any location in the universe. The problem is that, you know, it's very difficult to set that up without taking a perturbative approach. If you take a perturbative approach, then that means you've chosen a background.
Sorry, which approach you take?
If you're thinking of at each location in the universe, you want to think of the rotational dragging of all of the other masses in the universe. But because if you don't have a global frame to work with, you can't say it's some distance mass, how is it rotating relative to my reference mass. And so now you've got a problem that if you choose a background that you're going to expand about a kick perturbative approach, then your background has already made the assumption that,
I agree. Sure. So in this cosmological setting, sure, I agree.
So if you take that cosmological setting, it seems to me that if we really haven't decided whether Mach's principle applies, is effective in general relativity or not, because all the approaches that I've aware of are perturbative.
Yeah, sure. No. I agree with this. But of course, we do observe our universe as it is. And some people say that even because of radiant radiation, so there is no real principle of relativity, which I think is false, actually, because you can always shield it away, this radiant radiation. But it determines your frame, does it?
It determines my...
Where radiant radiation is isotropic.
Well, that just means I look out at things look isotropic to me, but I don't know that I don't have all of this running going on in a complex manner, which is, in fact, perhaps what's making it appear isotropic.
We can adopt the position of Vladimir Fock in his book.
Yeah.
He said, throw away general covariance. That's not him.
Yeah, and use harmonic coordinates. Yes, yes.
We don't have any problems.
Yeah. That was too dogmatic. Fock was too much influenced also by Lenin. It was only Landau and Lifshitz who rejected to write in introduction thanks to Stalin and Lenin and so on. All others bow down. Yeah.
Karl Marx.
Yeah, well.
Okay, so maybe we should take the speaker again.